This is VOA News. I'm Joe Ramsey. Poland says that a Russian-made missile fell in the eastern part of the country, killing two people in a blast that marked the first time since the invasion of Ukraine that Russian weapons came down on a NATO country. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky decried the strike as a, quote, very significant escalation of the war. Poland's prime minister said the government was investigating and raising its military preparedness. A statement from the Polish foreign ministry identified the missile as being made in Russia. The suspected Russian missile strike in Poland has prompted international concerns, AP correspondent Norman Hall reports.
President Joe Biden convened an emergency meeting of G7 and NATO leaders after NATO ally Poland said a Russian-made missile killed two people in the eastern part of its country near the Ukraine border. The leaders are gathered for the Group of 20 summit in Indonesia. Biden, who was awakened overnight by staff with the news of the missile explosion, called Polish President Andrzej Duda early Wednesday to express his deep condolences for the loss of life. Biden promised full U.S. support for and assistance with Poland's investigation and reaffirmed U.S. commitment to NATO. I'm Norman Hall.
Rumors of a rebel advance in eastern Congo have sent scores of people fleeing toward the city of Goma. The chaos began when false information spread that the M23 rebels would soon reach a camp for displaced people. The rebels have grabbed control of several key towns in recent weeks, more than doubling the territory they control. Again, rumors of a rebel advance in eastern Congo sent scores of people fleeing toward the city of Goma. This is VOA News. Former U.S. President Donald Trump is running for president again. Trump made his plans official Tuesday night after teasing the political of a comeback since before he even left the White House in 2021. He had hoped to piggyback off expected Republican gains in last week's midterm elections and stave off potential challenges. Instead, Trump is facing blame for the party's underwhelming performance. If Trump is ultimately successful, he'd just be the second president in U.S. history to serve two non-consecutive terms. Following the midterm elections, both U.S. political parties are gearing up for the new year, the AP's Ed Donahue reports.
With Democrats remaining in the majority, Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is celebrating the midterm results.
We had a great, happy, and spirited discussion in our caucus. Democrats are ready and eager and united.
For the Republicans, Florida's Rick Scott is mounting a long-shot bid to unseat the minority leader, Mitch McConnell.
I have the votes. I will be elected. The only issue is whether we do it sooner or later.
Scott's unexpected challenge to McConnell comes as Republicans are wrestling over a lackluster performance in the midterms when the party out of power historically sees significant gains. Ed Donahue, Washington.
A Palestinian killed three Israelis near a Jewish settlement in the occupied West Bank and was hailed by Islamist militants as a hero on Tuesday, hours before Israel swore in lawmakers set to return Benjamin Netanyahu to power atop a hard-right coalition. The attack, which Israeli officials said was carried out by a knife-wielding man who was later shot dead by a soldier, was the bloodiest for Israel since it intensified West Bank raids in March. Scores of Palestinians, among them gunmen and civilians, have been killed since. A surge in bloodshed that has deepened frustrations of hoping achieving statehood. Beyonce leads the Grammy nominations with 9. AP Entertainment correspondent Margie Zarletta has more.
Beyonce's 9 nominations include Record and Song of the Year for Break My Soul and Album of the Year for Renaissance. With 88 Grammy nominations overall, she's now tied with her husband, Jay-Z, who got 5 nominations and also has 88. Pushing the snakes, I'm pushing the fake. Kendrick Lamar has 8 nominations. Adele and Brandi Carlile each have 7. The Grammys are February 5th in Los Angeles. I'm Margie Zarletta.
U.S. space agency NASA is fueling its new moon rocket for a middle-of-the-night launch. It's the third attempt to put an empty capsule around the moon for the first time in 50 years. Fuel leaks plagued the first two attempts, then a pair of hurricanes caused more delays. The 322-foot rocket is poised to blast off from Florida's Kennedy Space Center in the wee hours of Wednesday. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Thank you. Today is Wednesday, November 16th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the Pentagon probes report of a possible Russian missile strike at a village in eastern Poland.
There had been a spokesman that had told the Associated Press that, yes, indeed, top leaders are holding a crisis meeting at this time just to figure out how to handle this.
UN investigators allege Ukrainian and Russian prisoners of war have been subjected to torture.
The head of the UN Human Rights Monitoring Mission in Ukraine, Matilda Bogner, says Ukrainian prisoners of war told her team they were beaten immediately upon capture.
And two trucks carrying medical supplies arrive in Ethiopia's Tigray region as hope rises for peace. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Russia pounded Ukraine's energy facilities with its biggest barrage of missiles yet, striking targets across the country and causing widespread blackouts. A senior U.S. intelligence official said missiles crossed into NATO member Poland, where two people were killed. Pentagon spokesperson Brigadier General Patrick Ryder said officials are investigating the reports. Polish radio ZET reported that two stray missiles hit Podol village on Tuesday, killing two people without giving any details. Analysts fear an intentional strike by Russia on a member nation could trigger retaliation from the alliance. For more, I spoke with VOA's Pentagon correspondent Carla Barr.
This should not take a lot of time to figure out and sort out what has happened here. Bellingcat, which is a big defense expert, one of their officials and founders just put out some information of a piece of debris. There's a picture on social media now that looks like it could be resembling an S-300 surface-to-air missile. Now, those are what the Ukrainians have. And this picture could mean that this could have been debris that fell down into Poland after the Ukrainians shot down a Russian missile that was headed for Ukrainian territory. This is the type of thing that the Pentagon wants to make sure it gets right before coming out and making a statement on such matters, because we're talking about NATO territory here. We're talking about a serious escalation potentially should Poland want to escalate this. But let's also caution that it appears, no matter what this actually is, that Russia was not indeed targeting anything in Poland. Russia has come out and denied any involvement whatsoever. It says its missiles weren't over in that location. We don't know what to believe from the Russians.
There are reports that Poland is taking this pretty seriously and that it's asking for an emergency meeting of NATO. Anything from the Pentagon on that?
Well, the Pentagon did say that they didn't have any sort of readout at this time between Austin and his counterpart. I know the White House is saying that the president is trying to talk to his Polish counterpart today. The Polish government had not immediately confirmed the report. There had been a spokesman that had told the Associated Press that, yes, indeed, top leaders are holding a crisis meeting at this time just to figure out how to handle this. But again, before any actions can happen, I feel that all NATO countries have put forward that they want to establish the facts first. We've heard that from the Pentagon with Pat Ryder, the spokesman today. And we've also heard that from NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg, who just sent out a tweet saying that NATO is monitoring the situation. He did speak to President Duda, the Polish president, offered his condolences for the loss of life, and added that it is important that all the facts are established.
That's VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Barb speaking with me from Washington, D.C. A team of UN investigators finds both Ukrainian and Russian prisoners of war have been subjected to torture and ill treatment by their captors. The report is based on interviews over the past several months with 159 POWs, including 20 women held by the Russian Federation and 175 male POWs held by Ukraine. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The investigators report only Ukraine has granted them confidential access to Russian prisoners of war in places of internment. They say Russia did not grant them similar access, so they have conducted interviews with Ukrainian POWs upon their release. Speaking from Kyiv, the head of the UN Human Rights Monitoring Mission in Ukraine, Matilda Bogner, says Ukrainian prisoners of war told her team they were beaten immediately upon capture. Some had their personal belongings pillaged. When they arrived at certain Russian internment centers, Bogner notes the POW said they were subjected to prolonged beatings, threats, dog attacks, were stripped and put into stress positions. She says the mission has received information that 9 POWs have died during these so-called admission procedures since mid-April. She says her team is working now to corroborate these reported deaths.
The vast majority of those we interviewed told us that during their internment, they were tortured and ill-treated. Torture and ill-treatment were not only used to coerce prisoners of war to give military information or statements about alleged crimes. They were, interviewees told us, used on a daily basis to intimidate and humiliate them.
Bogner says the UN mission has documented cases of Russian POWs subjected to torture and ill-treatment by members of the Ukrainian armed forces. According to Bogner, some of the men said they were punched and kicked after surrendering and when interrogated. Others said they were stabbed or given electric shocks by Ukrainian law enforcement officers or military personnel guarding them.
There have been allegations, credible allegations, of summary executions carried out by Ukrainian armed forces. These happened earlier on in the conflict. The authorities, Ukrainian authorities, have opened investigations into those allegations, but we have not seen progress in the investigations thus far.
Bogner says she and her team have not yet been to the port city of Kherson, which Ukraine recently recaptured from Russia. She notes UN monitors have conducted investigations in several nearby villages which were abandoned by the Russian forces in the past few weeks. She says they have, quote, documented over 70, almost 80 cases of enforced disappearances and arbitrary detentions in the area. She says the mission will investigate alleged war crimes and violations of human rights and international humanitarian law that may have been committed by Russian forces in Kherson. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thank you, Lisa. The Israeli so-called law of return says that anyone with one Jewish grandparent can immigrate to Israel and receive Israeli citizenship. Russian President Vladimir Putin's decision to draft 300,000 men to fight in the war against Ukraine has prompted thousands of Russians to move to Israel, with tens of thousands of others on the way. Linda Granstein reports from Ben Gurion Airport near Tel Aviv.
Russian Jews Eli Agarishev and Olga Shpektarova had been thinking of moving to Israel with their two daughters for the last 6 years and even started studying Hebrew in Moscow. But Russia's invasion of Ukraine convinced them that it was time to leave now.
I am really against the war, and I don't want to participate in it. Friends of mine were drafted and even died fighting.
We debated for a long time about coming, but the situation in Russia really gave us a push. We're a little tired now, but ready for whatever comes next.
The Jewish Agency, which takes care of immigration and absorption of new immigrants to Israel, says that more than 30,000 Russians have arrived since Russia launched its war in Ukraine, and that the number of applications has accelerated since Putin announced the draft of 300,000 men into the Russian army. History professor Jonathan Dekel-Chen specializes in Soviet and East European Jewry studies at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem.
I think this mini wave of immigration has, of course, been ignited by the orders of Putin and his government to begin the conscription, some might say forced conscription, of reservists and others.
Israeli politician Natan Sharansky, a former Soviet dissident who spent 9 years in Soviet prisons because of his efforts to emigrate to Israel, says that the exodus of Russians with Jewish family connections is more generally related to Putin's autocratic restrictions on Russian society.
It started from the moment Putin put some restrictions on freedom of expressions, on freedom of organizations, on freedom of communications with other people abroad, and maybe most important, freedom of free discussion and expressing different views. I think that something is very frightening, especially to the intelligentsia.
Many Russians are researching their genealogy in the Russian National Archives to find a Jewish grandparent, which would make them eligible to immigrate to Israel under Israel's law of return. Sharansky says about 600,000 Russians have this Jewish family connection. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Ben-Gurion Airport, Israel.
A UN brokered deal with Russia to allow the shipment of Ukrainian grain is due for renewal Saturday, as Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul, Turkey, is working to get Russia to reauthorize the deal in the face of rising world food prices.
A ship carrying Ukrainian grain to world markets, thanks to United Nations brokered deal between Russia and Ukraine that lifted a Russian blockade of Ukrainian ports. But analysts say Moscow's brief suspension of the agreement last month is a warning that tough negotiations lie ahead to get the deal renewed on November the 19th. Zal Gazimov is a professor of history and an expert on Russia at Bonn University.
I guess it's that gives tools to Russia now to negotiate and to try to soften sanctions on its bank system. That is the main effort of Russia now, to get some more softening of sanctions.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has gotten international praise for helping to broker the grain deal and facilitating Russia to return to it last month. While much of the world has shunned Russian President Vladimir Putin for invading Ukraine, Erdogan has deepened ties, regularly meeting with the Russian leader. Ankara's refusal to join Western sanctions against Moscow further strengthens the relationship, which observers say gives Erdogan leverage in efforts to renew the grain deal. Hussein Baja is the head of the Foreign Policy Institute, an Ankara-based research organization.
One hand is washing the other, so they need each other. So this is a political cooperation in order to keep their powers in their countries. But Tayyip Erdogan has definitely great interest that the deal continues, and Putin makes such concessions or gestures to him that Erdogan is getting stronger in domestic politics.
Turkey's role in the UN brokered grain deal is seen as one of Erdogan's biggest diplomatic successes. The grain deal is administered in Istanbul, underlining Turkey's importance to the agreement and vindication, observers say, of Ankara's balanced approach to the Ukraine conflict. Senen Aydın Duzkit is a professor of international relations at Sabancı University near Istanbul.
So far, Turkey has managed a sort of a balancing act between Russia and Europe and has played that role pretty well. And, you know, that goes for its role in the grain deal and, you know, negotiations between Ukrainians and Russians, although we know that it didn't lead anywhere, but still, right? So it has kind of managed to use that position, that mediation, that power, the fact that it can speak both to Putin, but also to the Europeans and the Americans as a member of NATO.
Ankara may be able to persuade Moscow to renew the grain deal, allowing ships to continue to deliver desperately needed Ukrainian grain to world markets. Experts say it will also be a key test of Turkey's effort to show a balanced approach towards Russia. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
In other news, cholera cases are overwhelming Haiti as experts warn the situation could worsen. Now that the country is bustling once again after paralyzing a fuel blockade that lasted 2 months. Dr. Gianti Fields, a spokesman for Haiti's Ministry of Health, tells the Associated Press that people are back on the streets and likely spreading cholera. This as the government struggles to find life-saving equipment, including IV supplies, amid an ongoing discussion on whether to request cholera vaccines. At least 161 people have died and more than 7,600 are hospitalized, according to the Pan American Health Organization and Haiti's government, although officials believe the numbers are much higher. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. U.S. President Joe Biden met with Chinese leader Xi Jinping Monday on the sidelines of the G20 summit in Bali, hosted by Indonesian President Joko Widodo. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Widas-Kuwara is traveling with the president and brings us this report.
The resort island Bali, Indonesia, is the setting for the highly anticipated summit of the superpowers, U.S. President Joe Biden and Xi Jinping, his Chinese counterpart. Amid heightened tensions, both leaders stressed the need to manage differences and avoid conflict.
We, as the leaders of China and the United States, should play a role in guiding and setting the directions so as to find the correct direction for the development of the relations between our two countries.
In the meeting that lasted over 3 hours, Biden said he sought to lower tensions over Taiwan, a self-ruled island Beijing considers its breakaway province.
And I do not think there's any imminent attempt on the part of China to invade Taiwan. And I made it clear that our policy on Taiwan has not changed at all. It's the same exact position we've had. I made it clear that we want to see cross-strait issues peacefully resolved.
Biden said if Beijing is not able to rein in North Korea, the U.S. would move further to protect its allies in the region. Earlier Monday, Biden met President Joko Widodo, host of the G20 summit, a gathering of leaders of the world's 20 largest economies.
Well, as I told you, Mr. President, I don't think I'm going home.
The friendly banter belies months of intense diplomatic back and forth between Washington and Jakarta. Initially, Western leaders threatened a boycott unless Indonesia excluded Russian President Vladimir Putin. The compromise was to invite President Volodymyr Zelensky, despite Ukraine not being a G20 member. Zelensky is scheduled to participate virtually, while Moscow is sending Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. The war in Ukraine and its impact on global food and energy security will be high on the agenda at the G20 summit that begins Tuesday. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News, Bali.
Two trucks carrying medical supplies arrived in Ethiopia's Tigray region on Tuesday, the first shipment of international aid to reach the region since Ethiopia's federal government and Tigrayan forces agreed to a ceasefire earlier this month. Fred Hartar reports from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
The convoy by the International Committee of the Red Cross, or ICRC, delivered 40 tons of essential items, emergency medicines and surgical equipment to Mekele, Tigray's regional capital, according to an ICRC statement. Until today, no international aid had entered Tigray since late August. Restrictions on humanitarian access since the conflict erupted in November 2020 have resulted in a dire humanitarian crisis across the region, with millions in urgent need of food and medicine. The terms of the ceasefire deal, struck in South Africa earlier this month, commits Ethiopia's federal government to facilitating unhindered humanitarian access to Tigray and restoring its phone, internet and banking services. Jude Finwi, a spokesperson for the ICRC in Ethiopia, said more aid, including food and basic household items, will be delivered to Tigray by air and road in the coming days.
The delivery today signifies hope to the population of Tigray. It also signifies to some of them hope for survival, because there are many patients in the region who could have died because of lack of medicine, because of lack of proper medical care, because most of the hospitals and health centers in the region had run out of medical supplies. We had some of the hospitals that were no longer functional, and the health system in the region was entirely or has been entirely under serious pressure.
Last week, Ethiopia's chief negotiator in the talks, Redwan Hussein, said services were being restored to Tigray. Well, on Tuesday, Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed said his government was committed to implementing the ceasefire deal. A spokesperson from the UN's World Food Programme told VOA their organisation had not yet resumed aid deliveries to Tigray, where nutritional supplies have mostly run out. Roughly one-third of children and three-quarters of lactating mothers screened for malnutrition in Tigray last month were malnourished. Fred Harter for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists have long wondered about when early humans started to use fire to cook food. A new discovery may provide an answer. Researchers from three Israeli universities, in collaboration with other institutions, have found proof of prehistoric humans using fire to cook food that predates previous evidence by more than 600,000 years. According to a press release from Tel Aviv University, the scientists performed a rigorous examination of the remnants of what was described as a carp-like fish. The remains were found at an archaeological site in Israel, and the researchers' analysis indicates that the fish was cooked about 780,000 years ago. They point out that until their discovery, the earliest proof of food being cooked for consumption dates back some 170,000 years ago. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Encounter. Next up, 2 years after a so-called military operation morphed into a civil war, the African Union brokered a ceasefire between Addis Ababa and representatives of the Tigray region. We talk with two former ambassadors to Ethiopia to evaluate the sustainability of the ceasefire, as well as to take stock of the humanitarian and economic toll the war has taken on the people of Ethiopia. That's Encounter, Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com and check out VOA Africa for more English language programming. You can find International Edition on our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States strongly condemns the resumption of fighting by the March 23rd Movement Armed Group, or M23, in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. State Department spokesperson Ned Price said in a written statement, "The resumption of hostilities since October 20th has caused significant human suffering, including deaths and injuries among civilians, and significant numbers of newly displaced persons. The United States calls for an immediate cessation of hostilities and respect for human rights and international humanitarian law." M23 is a militant group operating in eastern DRC, made up of rebels who defected from the DRC's armed forces. There are credible reports it is supported by the government of Rwanda. The M23 and some of its leaders, including Sultani Makenga, have been sanctioned by the United States and the United Nations for horrific attacks on civilians. M23 fighters recently seized multiple towns and two major roads in the DRC's North Kivu province. At least 20 civilians were killed, at least 50 were injured, and 6 peacekeepers from the United Nations Organization Stabilization Mission in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, or MONUSCO, were injured. The offensive has displaced an estimated 475,000 people since October 20th, with another 200,000 unable to leave occupied areas. The United States calls for M23 to withdraw from its positions, disarm, and rejoin the Inter-Congolese Dialogue, Nairobi process, in preparation for disarmament, demobilization, and community reintegration offered by the government of the DRC, said State Department spokesperson Price. At a Security Council briefing, Ambassador Robert Wood, U.S. Alternative Representative of Special Affairs, called on Rwanda to cease its support for the M23 and noted that MONUSCO remains critical to bringing peace to eastern DRC and the broader region. It serves an important purpose, protecting civilians, disrupting illicit networks, and helping stabilize governance and security institutions, he said. Ambassador Wood emphasized achieving peace is contingent upon a political process, political will, and political solutions. To that end, he said, the United States announced in September an additional $30 million in funding to support a transparent electoral process in the DRC, strengthening democratic institutions, bringing justice to victims, holding bad actors to account, respecting states' territorial sovereignty and integrity, and prioritizing civilians will help bring peace to the Great Lakes. The people of the region deserve nothing less.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.